Ryan Lehrer on WNYC, and okay, friends, let's talk about the state of friendship 2013. As it happens, we have tons of survey research about political opinion, demographic changes, views on social issues, but there's very little that looks into the nature of friendship. Well, a new group is trying to change that and start a conversation about the importance of friendship, and they just released their first State of Friendship 2013 report with some fascinating survey results from the midlife friendship slump that they think they see to the length some friends will go for each other. Tim Walker is one of the co-founders of Lifeboat, the organization that set up the survey. Tim, welcome to WNYC.
Oh, thanks, Brian. It's great to be here.
And there are some big picture findings that we'll get to, but I want to bring up one interesting wrinkle to set up some calls.
Sure.
And here's the finding. Americans doubt that their close friends would have their back in a crisis. For example, just 33% think a friend would lend them $500. Just 23% think a friend would bail them out of jail. And what percent think a friend would donate a kidney to them? And that is a long way to go for a friend. Well, just 22%. So listeners, here's the question for you. What's the greatest length you've ever gone to for a friend? What's the most extreme thing you've ever done for a friend? Or what's the most extreme thing a friend has ever done for you? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Tell us your extreme friendship stories, and we'll also crunch some data here about the state of friendship in general with Tim Walker from Lifeboat. Tim, those are interesting numbers on extreme friendship. But what do you see as the mark of a true friend? And what made you do this survey of all things in the first place?
Sure. Well, you know, Lifeboat actually began when I experienced my own midlife friendship slump. A few years ago went through a breakup, and in the aftermath, realized I'd been a social but unsatisfied fast food friendship junkie. This was something I was craving, was more stable, solid friendship. And Lifeboat is just began this really, really simple personal exercise to learn to be a better friend. And it snowballed. And with my co-founder, Aaliyah McKee, we started turning the idea into a movement.
And so, for example, you found – well, I'm going to read a few of your data points here because they're interesting. And just to give people an idea, Gen Xers and baby boomers – exhibit markedly lower levels of overall satisfaction with their friendships than do millennials and seniors, indicating that midlife friendship slump. Women say they have more intimate friendships, but they're no happier than men with the state of their friendships in general. Yeah. Most Americans, by more than 2 to 1, would prefer to have deeper friendships than more friends. Use of social media, apparently not a factor, even with Facebook friends, that doesn't seem to influence one way or another your satisfaction with your in-person friends. And there are even some political findings, like conservatives are more likely to be satisfied with their friendships than liberals by a 32% to 21% margin.
A happier bunch on the right. That's right. And let me just, you know, go back to your first point there, which is the big finding of this study. And we just released it yesterday. And that's that if you're feeling unsure about your friends, right, you're not alone, that only a quarter of Americans say they're truly satisfied with their friendships. You know, only 2/3 say they're confident in even their closest friends. This cuts across demographics, right? In the face of this, you know, 2 to 1 Americans say they want deeper friendships. This is what they're craving compared to more friends. And those are the really big findings. Those people who are able to, you know, actually create these deeper relationships find themselves far more satisfied with friendships in general and their life, actually.
So this fact that the Gen Xers and the baby boomers were the least satisfied with their friendships, do you think that is necessarily a midlife slump, as you called it, and that's going to rebound when those folks get older? Or is it something specific about Generation X and baby boom Americans and the nature of their relationships?
Sure. Well, the research was inconclusive on that, but we certainly have some assumptions. You know, a big part of the experience of Xers and Boomers is these are very busy years, right? These are times when you're really invested in work and you're invested in family often, and you got your head down, and that's where your priorities are. And oftentimes, coming out of this slump, people lift their head up and say, "Hey, wait, you know, where are the friends that I used to have this nostalgia for it?" And you compare that to the experience of millennials, right? Friends are a big part of their life. They have natural networks in school. And then seniors, certainly, who have more time to invest in the kind of relationships. And, you know, it really my sense is that this is actually a part of the life experience in midlife.
Let's hear from some of our callers with their extreme friendship stories and experiences. Erica in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hi, Erica.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good.
Good morning.
What did you, I guess this is about something that you did for a friend.
Right. So, you know, during these tough economic times, we're all going through different things. I had a friend who was in between jobs and had asked me for a loan of a couple of $1,000s for their to make their mortgage payment. And I said, you know, here's $10,000 instead of three.
Wow.
Pay it back when you can. And, you know, if that's 5 years from now, whatever, you know, whenever you need it, it's yours. This is a friend I've had for 25 years, and I would do anything for her.
It's a wonderful story, Erica. She appreciated it, I presume.
She did, and she was shocked, you know. She was a little uncomfortable at first because she was like, it's so much. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want you to have to worry. I see there's so much stress going on in your life, and if there's something that I can do as a friend to alleviate that, you know, that's my job as your friend, is to help you through life and alleviate stress. And if it's just money that you need, then I can do that.
And do you think you have friends who would have your back in the same way to the point of the survey? You do.
Yeah. I call that my 4 o'clock in the morning friends. I could call them at 4 o'clock in the morning. They'll get out of bed. They'll come and take care of me.
That's it. Like the 3 a.m. phone call from world leader to world leader.
Sure.
You have your 4 a.m. friends. Erica, it's a wonderful story. Thank you for calling. But the cliche, Tim, is that ultimately family matters above all. Mm. So in what ways do you think friends matter in the big scheme of things?
Sure. Well, academics talk about friendship as a very unique relationship. Because of the one thing, it's voluntary. You know, we inherit our family. We don't get a choice in that. And in that way, you know, because it's a voluntary activity, it can come and go a lot easier, and it has a more anxiety-filled potential to it, right? But friendship is also very, very powerful because of that exact same fact. People are choosing into it, right? That great story from Erica about what she'll do for a friend, that has great warmth into it because she didn't have any obligation to do that, right? That was literally her expressing to her friend what an important person she was in her life.
And Linda on Staten Island has a story, I think, of what some friends did for her. Linda, thank you for calling.
Hi there. Yes, I had some surgery about 10 years ago, and I thought I didn't ask for the help, but I didn't even know how much help I would need, but friends came individually, 1 week at a time, to stay with me and my family, and I didn't even know how grateful and how necessary their help was until they were there doing it. And I'm very saddened to hear the statistics about like the cynicism of friends, or the cynicism about how responsive friends would be, or how people feel their friends wouldn't be so responsive.
Yeah, and if our listeners are any indication, since our lines are lighting up, there are a lot of people like Linda out there who have really, really good friends who they do feel that they can depend on. Maybe we have a particularly community-minded group. I don't know. But do you think it's something about American society? Would you get the same results pick your other country?
Sure. We weren't able to stretch the study that far. I don't want to hypothesize about the particular condition of America, but I will say that these stories of what you called extreme friendship, right, which are, you know, probably the best of us, are really out there. And the stuff that we found in the study around really low response to what we called high bar favors, right, really ladders back up to the concept of not feeling secure. Right. If you're not sure where you stand with someone, that your willingness to do these great things is pretty low. No one wants to be burned or feel like they're taken advantage of. So the one sort of leads to the other, right? When Erica or Linda do these huge favors, it's often has to do with the fact that they really understand that this is a mutual relationship.
And some of the other ones that are coming in that we're not going to have time to put on the air, Carol in Franklin, New Jersey, said she helped a friend this is David in Manhattan who met somebody in Cuba who was jailed and tortured and helped her escape. That's a friend. And Audra on our comments page who writes, Aldona on her comments page who writes, I became friends with my friend Audra in Lithuanian boarding school. We remained close friends for years, and when she died, leaving twin daughters, she left them to me to adopt and raise. Mm. So that's a friend named Aldona. But before you go, I just want to get to the social media piece of this a little bit, because 68% of Americans say they would prefer to have deeper friendships. 32% say they would rather have more friends. I can already see tons of people nodding and saying, I knew it, and it's Facebook's fault. So what were you able to determine about that?
Sure. Well, there is a raging debate there, maybe a little bit tired, about whether, you know, Facebook is this villain that's keeping us from connecting, you know, in a human way. Or on the other side, if it's, you know, the great future of the way that we're going to interact. And our findings were, you know, pretty straightforward, that Facebook doesn't really matter that much when it comes to friendship, that it's like any other communication technology, like the telephone or like a postcard. If you use it or if you don't use it, it's not going to determine your friendship satisfaction.
Any advice before you go for people who are in this big group that is not satisfied with their adult friendships?
Absolutely. And please, you know, come to the website, getlifeboat.com, to dig into this further. But our biggest piece of advice, it's the metaphor of lifeboat, that you can go deep and not wide. Having great friendships takes time. It takes cognitive capacity. One of the biggest things you can do is focus down on who your lifeboat is, who's in your lifeboat, a handful of people that you want to practice being a great friend with. And we've just seen that have a huge result.
Tim Walker, one of the co-founders of Lifeboat, the organization that just released the survey of adult friendships in the United States. Very, very provocative. Thank you for making us think about our friendships.
Oh, thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Coming up next, we conclude our series with the obituary editor of the New York Times, Bill McDonald. We've been talking about all these interesting lives that people have led. We'll see who he's picked today. Stay with us.